listening to the After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
Hello.
Hello.
Have you done an intro while I was gone?
I haven't.
Did you do your own intro?
No, I haven't done any
intro. Did you talk about me?
I've literally just pressed the record button. No, there was no talking about you. Why would I talk about you? There's literally nothing to say about you.
There's lots of things to say about me when I'm not in the room. Lots of vicious scandal. Oh, just suggestions.
Oh, about
just
how,
suggestions.
About how wrong you are. Because earlier you did admit how wrong you were.
When did I admit that?
On our walk down to the cinema, you were crediting me with being right about something when you were utterly wrong.
What was this? I don't remember.
And then we said you were wronger than someone who had been spray painted wrong.
Oh, I do remember that.
And then we
I don't remember what I was wrong about.
You were wrong about the fact that it was three squibs. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Tony three squibs.
Tony three squibs. This is a flashback to an episode no one's heard.
Oh, it's like meta. It's like meta podcast.
It's like, well, the inside joke.
From now on, the After Movie Diner will require you to listen to all episodes.
Every single
before
episode.
Before it becomes funny.
Yeah.
If it's not funny,
no.
It's because you haven't listened to all
it's
the
because
episodes.
You haven't listened
you
to all
have
the
go back. You haven't listened to all of them.
You haven't scoured through and our only innocuous get drivel enough. So anyway, hello and welcome to this episode of the After Movie Diner. Here we are in a diner after a movie. I don't know if it was a movie or a life sentence because it was interminably long.
It was very long.
In fact, I have to say, had I perused the information about the film more closely when we decided to go see I would have seen that it was over 2.5 hours long, and I would have gone bollocks to that for a game of Jeremy Irons dressed up as a ludicrous Russian soldier.
What would we have? Oh, lovely, thank you.
I don't know what we would have said. Watched instead. I don't know. Paint dry. What?
Oh. No, I mean...
I just made a paint dry joke.
A movie. I was very impressed with your paint dry joke. I was just enjoying my enormous chili.
So here we are in the famous cozy soup Unburger. It's a Tut Diner about 6 blocks down from the Tut Cinema we went to.
I'm just going to dig in, mate. Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. He's got a big bowl of revolting-looking chili. He's going to enjoy it, probably.
It looks pretty good to me.
It looks pretty good to you. Crackers, no rice. I know so much about you from the way you order food.
Wait, what is that, Teddy? The fact that
I am creating in my mind palace an entire Sherlock Holmesian dissection of your very character, right down to the bootstraps of your soul, mate.
Share it, mate. Share it with me.
No, I'm still...
I'm all fucking ears.
It's still formulating.
It's still forming until it's finished.
It's 200 and whatever episodes, and I've just got to keep building it. Basically, what the listeners need to know is throughout all the episodes, we are stringing little bits of information about Jim until, like, I don't know, we hit episode 500.
It's just like a really, really long con.
It is.
Like, and eventually, then, there'll be a bit in the flashback where they explain when you go on over it, they'll be going, and remember how you liked the chili?
Yeah.
Be like, oh no, the chili was key to the whole scheme.
Once we get to episode 500, which, by the way, literally only you and I will listen to at that point. There will be some big reveal, and it'll come. The whole walls of reality, mate, will come crashing down.
About time, mate.
About time.
About time. The walls of reality. Been up for too long. They've been not crashing down for too long, in my opinion.
So why don't you tell the listeners what fucking movie we saw tonight?
We went and saw Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow.
Or, if you were Ray Winston, Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow.
Oh, it's Red Sparrow.
Red
He's coming back. and round the track, it's Red Sparrow. Followed by Cockney Lad.
I think a little bit of Ray would have been all right in this movie.
Yeah, Ray would have. Hang on a second. Red Sparrow, or also known as Black Widow.
Well, not really, though, because she never becomes like a kick-ass. Yeah,
thank
black.
You very much.
They never become a kick-ass martial artist.
What's funny is when someone said to the director, what do you make of all these Black Widow comparisons, considering Black Widow, Red Sparrow, like, it's just a bit ridiculous, right? And he went, I think once people see it, they'll realize that this isn't an action movie. It is incredibly violent, but it's a thriller, it's a think piece, plus it's based on a book. And I'm like, so wait a minute, what you're saying is the book stole from Black Widow, and then you stole from the book. What he should have said, the way to define it would have been really easy. He should have gone, oh, it's not, don't worry about it. It's nothing like Black Widow. For a start, it's 2.5 hours long. And secondly, it's interminably dull for at least 2 of those hours. That way, he could have gone, no, let me arrest your fears. If Marvel ever make a Black Widow movie, it will at least be 60% entertaining. Even the worst Marvel movies are at least 50 to 60% entertaining. This one, on the other hand, will bore you to tears, mate. So therefore, because of that, it can't possibly be related to Black Widow at all.
I quite liked it. We should do a very, at least a brief, before we just embark on our argument as to why it is or is not good.
All right.
We should at least talk roughly, vaguely about it. So clearly, you think people should not see the movie.
Well, if you value your knees...
Right. Well, I would say...
Sorry, I said that with a hot chip in my mouth. If you value your knees...
Chip, he said chip.
Chip, as in
I know.
Potato
I know.
Chip. Well, no, not as in potato, as in French fries.
There you go, you confused yourself there, didn't you?
I've confused myself. It's not... Do I think people should see the movie?
I would say, don't go and see it in the cinema. I have to say, I do feel freed by the movie past that. Right? I no longer feel like...
He's talking about the movie pass.
Sorry, we basically we pay a tenner a month and we can watch all the movies we want.
Yeah.
So
this one costs
point,
$17.50. And had I actually paid that out of my pocket, I would have been absolutely livid.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying. I now have a different attitude to things. So I feel a little less. The bar is a lot lower. So I would say don't go and see it at the cinema. If it like crops up on Netflix or whatever. If you like slow, atmospheric, moody, nicely shot, kind of spy drama-y, intrigue-y things, then this is a pretty good one.
There's no spy drama or intrigue
there's spy,
at all.
There's spy and intrigue. What's spy and intrigue? They're all spying on each other and intriguing each other, and she's in the middle of it.
It's literally a movie where it's written where it could be everyone could be lying to each other, or everyone could be telling the truth.
But that's
hang
good. That's a good.
Hang
thing.
On a second.
Right.
Everyone could be lying to each other.
Right.
Everyone could be telling the truth to each other. Some people could be lying. Some people could be telling the truth. And ultimately, and literally, it really, really doesn't matter to anything because. Yeah. At no point are we explained what the stakes are in terms of like the Americans and the Russians, other than the Americans. Hang on a second. Other right. than the Americans and the Russians, right? And it's set in 2017, but or certainly in modern times, but desperately wishes it was set in the 1970s.
Right.
Which, by the way, setting it in modern times makes little to no sense because, again, the so-called stakes that are in play don't exist in the same way in 2017. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is...
Wait, I'm
going to... Hang on a second, let me
and then you're going to be... And then the 33rd thing, like...
No, I'm
know,
not.
We could be here
no,
forever.
No, hang on a second.
All right.
So therefore, the true stakes are the personal stakes, and you'll go into this with the plot, but the true stakes are the personal stakes for her, for Red Sparrow, and what she's ultimately trying to achieve, right? And that particular plot thread, i.e. the uncle, could have been wrapped up in 90 minutes.
Look, I don't just...
So anyway, go through the plot and...
All right, I'll go through the plot. Jennifer Lawrence, ballet dancer in Russia... niece of somebody high up in the security services. She stops being able to be a ballet dancer through some sort of nefarious means on the part of number two, I guess.
Her co-stars.
And finds herself, the uncle gives her a deal because her mum is sick and they live in an apartment paid for by the Bolshoi Ballet and her mother's medical care is paid for by the Bolshoi Ballet. So the uncle says, do one night's work for me and I'll pay for your mum and the apartment. So she goes, all right. And he basically says, take this bloke, do what he wants. But swap phones. That's all you got to do, right? That's it. Phone swap. During the simple phone swap, things go awry. He gets a bit overly keen, and while distracted, is murdered by the Russian security services, at which she is a witness, at which point she is given a choice.
By the only assassin the Russian secret service have.
No, the only one that the brother guy trusts, I guess. Anyway,
The only assassin who happens to look a lumpy Michael Pitt with Nazi blonde hair.
You can get through your lumpy Michael Pitt later.
Who can be wherever he wants, whenever he wants, regardless of, you know, distance or
At no point does he move from one place to another.
He shows up repeatedly in lots of different places. Anyway,
People do.
Right.
Anyway.
You'd think they'd go, why are we...
Stop derailing the plot.
All right.
You can complain later. Let me get through the plot and then you can start complaining.
Oh, it got a little bit tense there, Murray, didn't it? I don't know what's going to happen yet or what kind of play John Cross is going to make against Jim Wallace in the future, but for right now, it looks like he's going to sit down and shut up.
So, she's given a choice. Either I can't protect you anymore, in other words, you're dead, or become what they call a sparrow, which is basically like a seduction agent. So she gets sent off to seduction school, taught, you know, kind of how to, you know, be seductive, and then is sent out into the field because the Russians believe they have a higher mole in their security services, and an American guy who's the mole's handler.
A mole handler? A mole handler? What, a person who handles moles? What kind of job is that?
They want her to seduce the American bloke. And so she becomes sort of a half... She becomes...
How's everything so far?
Lovely.
Lovely, thank you.
She is in the middle of this Russian-America power game. Who's the mole? Protect the mole. Talk to the mole. Kill the mole. All that stuff is going on. And she's all in the middle of it.
Protect the mole? Kill the mole? But what am I doing with a mole? Certainly don't want to cuddle it. And I don't want to protect it either. To kill the damn thing with some poison or something. Or a shovel. Hit it. Hit it with a spade.
That's basically the plot. Can I just say one thing?
Oh, Murray, it looks like he's not stopping. We thought he'd got to the end of the plot, but it looks like he's carrying on. It's a bold and brave new Jim Wallace painted world that we all live in. And John Cross can do nothing but sit there dumbfounded.
I agree with you.
Oh, my goodness, Murray, we were not expecting that. He said he agreed with him. Who would have thunk it?
I agree with you. If they cut out the whole seduction school thing was, like, didn't work. It was boring and it slowed it down. And it screwed up the pace, it screwed up the look, it screwed up kind of the points they were trying to make.
There was an incredibly long and mostly irrelevant build-up. And at no point, really... And I know they think they did, but at no point really did they actually show the prowess that everyone gives her credit for. Apart from the fact that she's like, oh, blah, 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 I see a photo of someone and I realise that really they just want to be nice to their daughter. Or, you know, a guy tries to rape me so I recognise that he wants power over me, which... You know, whoop-de-doo, give her a PhD in psychology there.
Oh, it's all getting a bit tense again, Murray. John Cross is all over the place. He's like a clown at a kid's party. Not a good clown and not a really scary clown. Kind of like a bit of a shit clown who maybe drinks on the weekend, who's trying to make a balloon animal, but every time he blows into the balloon, it just shoots off and whizzes around the place. He never really gets it right, and then he demands twice as much money at the end anyway. I think this metaphor has kind of gone off the rails a bit like this show, but can Jim Wallace wrestle this podcast back into some shape and put us back on the tracks, Murray? Can that happen, or are we all just in the shit?
All right. Now, first of all, right? It had huge flaws, and it was way too long. And there were bits where I was thinking, if I was anybody else but me, I would be bored, right? But you know how... I can't remember the last movie it was that we saw that we wanted to like, but we ended up really not liking. I can't remember what it was, but it was, anyway, it was kind
Atomic
of recent.
Blonde.
Right. I knew... Atomic Blonde's a good counterpoint to this, right, for me anyway. Because Atomic Blonde, after the first, like, 5 minutes or whatever, I thought, I don't think I like this. You know what I mean?
I want to point out, this movie, way better than Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, well, for sure, definitely. But in the same way, cross-cutting, even though it was, like, really... Like, it was not particularly imaginative, it wasn't making any particular... But the cross-cutting between Loki going out and doing his, like, spy handoff in Gorky Park and Lawrence getting ready for the ballet, it was this really pleasing throwback to those, like, old 80s movies. And it just really hooked me, really dragged me in. And I really liked Lawrence in it. I thought she was really good. And there was a bit where it was like... The thing about Lawrence is, and it's probably worth remembering this, right?
Did you really like her in it?
Yeah, I thought she was great. So it occurred to me, when she did the nude scene, right, I'm thinking, but there's no real reason to do it, necessarily. Like, you could have, like, done the scene without it. But then it occurred to me, the thing about Jennifer Lawrence, which, and it must be strange to be Jennifer Lawrence, that everybody's, like, seen her naked. They've seen it, right? So it's all like, what's she going to do with that, you know? And like the whole thing in the movie for
you're me, talking about the leaked photos from her phone,
right,
so
which I have not seen because I don't agree with that, but I know that they're out there anyway. It's weird for her because she must, like, I mean, it's a weird thing anyway because she's an actress and all the rest of it, but the thing about the movie that I liked was that the personal journey, like, it all being about her, and it wasn't about who knows, and it took me a while to get there. It's not like who knows what or what are the stakes or whatever. It's she's placed in this impossible situation, and, like, arguably she's manipulated from the very beginning of the movie. Like, someone else breaks her leg and throws her off the Bolshoi, right? Somebody else, like, there's no, the uncle giving her the information, like, he knows she's going to go and do something about it. She's going to be that furious. And then she kind of, like, already feels like she's not herself anyway. And that's when he chooses to, like, make her the offer.
Right.
And he kills the guy in front of her. Like, there must be a million other ways of, like, killing some guy. But he does it in a way that means he owns her, right?
Right.
And the whole movie is about...
He owns her. It sounded like you said he owes her. He owns her,
yeah. And the whole movie is about, do the Americans own her? Do the Russians own her? Does the uncle own her? Like, who's controlling her? Who does she work
right.
for? Who is, you know, is she telling the truth? Where are her loyalties? And what's interesting, if you look back on the movie, is she... It's very rare that she lies to anybody. Like, she mostly just tells people the truth.
Right.
Right? Because that's what they want.
Right.
And then she suggests that they keep using her, you know, so that she can keep going out there and telling the truth. But ultimately... All that stuff, I think, the, you know, the whole, like, heist, oh, but you were eating chips on Thursday, and so now, you know, the Queen wants you dead or whatever.
Wait, what? The Queen wants you dead? What? You can't just say whatever and brush over it like you didn't just say something totally bananas. I'm confused. I'm going home.
All that stuff, I think, was just, she knows they're looking for a mole. She's already aware that the uncle using the niece is a bit weird, and, like... He's using her because he's got a bit of a weird thing for her.
Yeah.
But it could also be, if he's the mole, like, she's a safe, you know, whatever, conduit between them anyway. I think she's just setting him up at the end. But all the way through, I don't think she knows what she's doing. I don't think there is some grandmaster plan. I don't think she's ever in control. All she's trying to do is make sure that nobody controls her all the way through. That's what
well,
I
that's
think.
Not true, because... She picks up the glass, she opens the bank account. All of that is like...
No, I agree.
About half of the way through.
No, I agree. And I'm saying, I think... I almost wish that stuff wasn't there. But I also think it's a safe bet that she doesn't necessarily know where it's leading.
Do you know why I'm glad it was there?
What?
When he got off the helicopter at the end and they unveiled him and he'd all been beaten up and stuff, I didn't know who that was.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, when they unveiled him, I was like, am I meant to know who that is? So I was really happy for the recap.
Oh, sorry, sorry, yeah.
Because I was... So throughout the movie, we see him all clean cut and wearing 70s plaid jackets, even though it's 2017.
And
a preponderance of turtlenecks. And he's all clean cut and clean shaven. And to be fair, although he does have... like a very good face for the character he was playing. In other words, fairly innocuous, but that level of innocuous where you're like, okay, it's also a bit insidious. Like it was kind of 50-50. That does mean that the moment you like ruffle up his hair and give him bruises and a bit of mud on
him,
like, who the fuck is that? Like, I just don't know who that is.
Put a bit of tracksuit and he's nobody. Which is kind of interesting in its own way. But I do take your point. I do. And I am.
Yeah, that was delicious. Thank you.
And I do think, it, in a little way, it spoiled it for me, except that it does make sense that all anybody wants is the mole's name. That's all anybody wants.
Right.
And she's just setting that up.
But I think
that the power of the movie, or at least the thing that I enjoyed about it, was coming to realise that she wasn't playing some big, you know, game where it turns out in the end that she was in charge all along. She's only ever just trying to get out from under people. Just like everything's about forward momentum with her character.
Yeah, no, it's so difficult. It's really, really
difficult. I know
what
you mean, because the thing is, right, it's not that you're saying it's shallow.
Sure.
It's not that you're saying it's like shallow or bad. It was just boring. And I totally understand where you're coming from, because it was fucking long.
So, to explain it to people, the movie is three things. The movie is people in rooms lying / telling the truth to each other.
Yes.
In very kind of like, were once ornate but now a bit run down Eastern European rooms. Right? Which is all very cool and groovy. The second part of the movie is actually exceptionally good cinematography of buildings, corridors.
Yeah, it was very cool.
There was a lot of corridors, like right down to like the red tiled corridor he walks down at the beginning, to the corridors at the ballet, to the corridors of the apartment building she was in. Like, and it was filmed, those bits were really, really good.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So there was a lot of talky-talky. There was a lot of. And then the third aspect of the movie is unflinching and completely unflinching, very hard R rated, either nudity, violence, or violence and nudity combined.
Yeah.
And at no point in a way that is particularly titillating.
No, it's not sexy violence.
And at no point is it...
It's not cool either.
It's not.
I haven't gone, unable to look at the screen. I can't even remember. I did it so many times in that movie.
It's squeamish, unpleasant, graphic violence, but not in a, look at how graphic we're being, but just in a way where you're like...
I think the worst bit was when he put the cloth... The guy was like torturing her, and he's like, and then he did it on her face, and then he put it on her head. I couldn't even.
I'm sorry. Would you like more hot water, sir?
No, I'm fine. Thank you. That one bit of just putting the cloth on top of her head, I couldn't even look. It's cloth and a club, and I know it's not happening. It's not like blood or gore or anything. He's just going to hit her with a club, and I couldn't look. It was too much.
And it is okay.
You're fine.
The thing that really bothers me about it is that you have to go, oh, well, it's such a brave performance. Because it is. Okay, so there's two things about Jennifer Lawrence's performance, especially the nudity and especially the violence. The first thing is it is a very brave performance. It's not...
I know, I found myself thinking that and then going, oh, I wish I hadn't thought that.
Right, it's not comfortable nudity. It's not pleasant, and she definitely sells the fact that what she is having to do and what she is undertaking, is as horrible as you could imagine it being.
There were some weird like Weinstein overtones to some of the. Do you know what I mean? Did you feel like some of her interactions with the blokes? There was like that kind of Weinstein-y thing of like these blokes in power.
Oh no, there was that's another thing that we can talk about in a second. But
right.
Sorry. Going back to my train of thought, sorry.
No, go for it, man.
So, it is a very bad... But I also had the feeling that you had throughout the movie, or certainly the scene that you're talking about, the where she confronts her would-be rapist in the Sparrow School, where she is completely naked. Not in a sexy way, in a completely like, oh my goodness.
No.
And what was interesting,
she's a very beautiful woman, but it's not sexy.
And what was interesting about it was that those photos were leaked. It was a big public mess, and it was horrible. It must have been a horrible, horrible, horrible invasion of privacy. And what is interesting about the movie, and what I can't deny about the movie, is that this was definitely her owning that and owning her body and owning her performance.
And it's her movie too.
And it's her, it's totally her movie. So the thing is while I really can't recommend the film because it is too long and I do have some issues with it that I can't quite vocalize, one of the things about it is that you can't deny the braveness and the strength of her central performance and the things that she is asked to do in it.
I presumably agrees to it because one thing I found out was she
The director has directed two of the Hunger Games movies, so she obviously knows him and feels comfortable with him, I would assume.
I know that for that ballet scene at the beginning, that's like 6 minutes long or whatever, she went to ballet school for 3 months.
Yeah.
Just to learn how to... And, like, if she was, like... If the studio were like, listen, we need you to be in a movie where you, you know, you take your top off, like, she's not going to go to ballet school for 3 months. I mean, like, clearly she cares about the movie.
Right. And no, I completely understand. I would imagine, and I don't know this, but I would imagine she picked the director, not the other way around.
Quite possibly. That's what I tell you what's weird about it is The Hunger Games, the first movie, which I saw, I hated it. And one of the reasons I hated it, and count yourself lucky, one of the reasons I hated it is the shaky cam was so bad, you can't tell what's happening for most of the movie.
Right.
And that's this guy. So, like, where'd he go? Where was him for The Hunger Games? I might have been able to watch that
thing. Maybe a new cinematographer for this. I don't know.
Maybe they put a gun to his head. And they went, if you move the camera, you die.
But yeah, so... The trouble is... The way you talk about it, and the way I think about it with hindsight, there's a lot to commend the film.
But it is fucking boring.
But like, I can't defend the film because...
Well, look,
And the thing is I can't sit here and go, take that 10 minutes out.
I would probably get rid of the school. I would get rid of the school bit. I don't think the rambling character or any of that really worked. And I think you're right. When they sent her out into... Because the point is, right, when they send her on the mission, right, to go and, you know, make nice with the guy. Right?
The American guy.
They've got to believe that she works for them. They've got to believe that she's really good at this, right? And it's, you know, they've got to believe that she's their girl, right? And I don't think... And the school had to establish those three things. And I don't think it did. It didn't really do it.
So, do you know what it didn't establish either? It's that there was no one else that was any good at it either. Like, there was no one in the school that was any good at anything.
You're right. They go, you better be careful because everybody's so good.
Right.
You know,
even
you'll
the bit where they were running along and she's looking at the guys doing target practice and stuff. First of all, we never saw her do target practice. No. Secondly, apart from the running, she doesn't do anything physical. We only know she can take care of herself because she beats up her rapist in the shower. And that's fine because she's not really called upon to be an action star in the rest of the movie. However, even the running or anything like that was half-assed. Every time they were asked to do anything sexual, which Rampling tries to get everyone to, like, do something grossly sexual just for the sake of
being...
And demeaning. No one does it.
No.
And it's like, well...
She's like a terrible... Yeah, you're right.
She's a terrible teacher. Yeah. They're all terrible students. You wouldn't be able to pick any of them.
I agree.
To be...
I would be interested because, again, if it's a book, the fact that that's in there means I can only assume it's a fair old chunk of the book. You know, there's probably like
a little bit of the bit, and then there's probably like half the book is the bloody school where she goes through that, and then she emerges from it. Right. But what's nice about, like, I feel like where they're coming from, because once that was out of the way and she was out in the world, what I liked was she didn't really know what she was doing, and she was like flying by the seat of her pants. She was like making decisions on the hoop, and she wasn't like a master spy, and she was just trying to figure it out as she went.
No, but what we learned,
so I liked
what we learned from the opening scene where she's trying to get, not the opening scene, but the scene where her uncle sends her to seduce the wealthy Russian guy, where this all starts. What we learn from that, and then what we learn again when she meets the American guy at the swimming pool, is that when she's caught out, when someone goes, hey, up, it's a bit weird you're here,
yeah,
or I saw you on the tram and you've dyed your hair, like you're not that good at whatever you think you're doing.
Right.
Her strength, if she has any strength at all, is being able to, like, on the hoof, come up with something that they want to hear, which we see twice, or at least twice, if not more so. Charlotte Rampling, Jeremy Irons, and her uncle all repeatedly say it about her like 500 times. You know, now I'm convincing myself again how crap the movie is. I keep going, it's one of those films where I keep going back and forth where I'm like, God, everyone wore turtlenecks and whatever. But at the same time, you get scenes where they're in the most 70s cinema that has ever existed. And Jeremy Irons, as a general in the Russian Secret Service, is sat there like loosely smoking a cigarette, wearing a pair of sunglasses.
He's incredibly loose. Do you think they said to him, or do you think he demanded, like, I will only play the part if you let me be loose?
Mm-hmm.
I will only be loose.
Yep.
We need to be more, like, you know, magnetic and charismatic.
Nope.
I can only give you loose.
I will.
That's all you're going to get for a bit.
Everyone is smoking like it's 1983.
Yeah.
And everything is grey and awful. But the trouble is on the flip side of that, like, that cinema shot is awesomely filmed. Like, it just, when it comes up and it's zooming in and you suddenly see that the chairs are this ridiculous pattern and a horrible, like, lime green colour, you're like, this is amazing. Like, did they build this cinema or did they find this and go, we have to shoot the hell out of it? So, like, there's bits in it, I guess the length really surprised me. I think that there is too much. I don't think there was a clear grasp on who she actually was in terms of. We know her motivation because we see her sick mother and stuff. But I also have the feeling that really, if push came to shove, she would give her up as well.
No, I think that's what's kind of. I think there was an. You know, it's the scene where she. There's a scene where she comes back after being tortured, right? And the mother, like, comes up to her and is like, oh, I missed you, or whatever. And up to that point, they've been all like, we're best buds and everything's great. And she, like, makes to hug her, and Lawrence just, like subtly, but sidesteps the hug and walks off. And it's not like you know, she's not, like, blowing her off or anything. It's just, like, a subtle shift in the, I'm here because you put me here. You know, and it's not her mum's fault that her mum's sick.
How do I know?
No, I'm all right. It's not her mum's fault, right, that she's sick. It's not her mum's fault that stuff costs money. It's not her mum's fault that she, you know, broke some ballerina's jaw, right? But, put another way, kind of is. Like, she's doing all this for her mum. It's really got not to blame her. So, and ultimately, she does choose the mother. Like, it's pretty clear she can, like, burn it all behind her, you know, and just fuck off to America. Like, that option is available to her. Or she can go back to her mum, but she knows they're never going to, like, how they're going to, like, spirit the mother away and live and die. It's never going to happen. So she chooses to go back to her mum. She chooses her mum.
Right.
But she has an, when she calls her up on the phone, and she's really, like, happy to hear her voice initially. You know what I mean? Like, there's a thing where it's like, oh, just hearing your voice. And then Rampling's like, oh, like, Rampling knows it's her. And then the facial expressions they both make after that point, like, after that kind of joy recognition, is like, like, Rampling obviously feels horribly guilty, but also sort of hates her for doing this stuff, clearly, you know what I mean? Like, how would you feel about your daughter going, yes, I'm going to bug her? Oh, you know, she said, I warned you about the bloody uncle. I warned you, right? And still she's going on doing it.
Rampling's not the mother.
No, not Richardson.
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 Yeah, that was confusing me. You were like, Rampling. What scene did Rampling know?
Yeah, sorry. But, so the point being is that they both have legitimate reasons to hate each other, but they're doing everything they're doing for each other as well. So there was like a pleasing, ambiguity.
I don't know.
She didn't do it all for a mum, but then again, she sort of did. She did what really the truth of it is.
Right.
She did what she did throughout the entire movie because it was her only way out. Everything she ever did, she did to stay alive.
No, I know. But now you're talking about it like it's a good movie and it's not a good
movie. But I enjoyed it.
No.
I know it's not good, but I enjoyed it. And we both know sometimes you can watch movies that for personal reasons, you like.
I'm having such a problem with this.
Why?
Well, because I was at the very least hoping that I could sit here and make jokes.
You can make jokes. There was lots of
No,
was
I can't make jokes.
Why not?
Because I don't have any in me. Because I'm suddenly feeling very tired. And maybe because I just sat through 3 hours
a long
of
movie.
Bleak grey.
And it was very bleak.
I just said it in the 70s. That really bothered me.
I don't know why they did that. I think they wanted to make some clever point about, like, Russia's continuing influence. But it didn't need it.
But I think, okay. So this is one of the points.
Okay.
The reason why, had this been a Black Widow movie, it would have been more enjoyable.
Yes.
Is that...
More fighting, less moping?
No, not that. It's just all the cliches that existed in this, of the Russianness of it, the 70s-ness of it.
Right.
I'm telling the truth.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
All the sexiness.
The lime green seats.
Right. All that stuff would still exist as it does here. But they would have known that that's what they were doing. There would have been some, like, acknowledgement of the cliches and a lot of fun to, like, bolster the cliches. And it would have just been, like, a good, fun romp with, I agree, skirting over the whole, like, horrible abuse thing. But, like, it would have been... there would have been at least... But the problem I have with it is that, on one hand, it wants to be... And I'm talking about Red Sparrow now. Is it wants to be a thinky, talky, men in room smoking, 70s turtleneck, art house, Eastern European, you know, nobody smiles, nobody tells a joke, you know, everyone's got their own agenda movie. And on the other hand, it wanted to have, like, all these cliches going on. And like, right down to fucking annoying things like, why were there floppy disks in 28? There was no way that she would be able to check floppy disks on a fucking laptop.
You're right. How did she check floppy disks on a laptop?
It just doesn't exist. It's not a thing that exists. Unless she had, like, some floppy disk checker, which isn't a thing.
Yeah, that's true. And presumably the reason is...
And then Mary Louise
presumably
Parker
they, presumably
showing up.
They moved, presumably they moved the setting of the book to 2017, right? Because you take the floppy disks, right? The floppy disks need to be there because that whole, like, thing with the desk and swapping disks, like, disks are big and they're, you know, they're cumbersome.
Was a whole, like, James Bondy spy movie scene.
No, I agree, but I'm just saying. But the point about
complete
the scene
with
in the
CIA
hotel
agent doing the funny English accent and can I check your minibar? Like, it was all stuff where I'm like, this would be fine if in between these scenes it was like ba da 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 ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da. But it wasn't. Between those scenes, it was. Horrible, violent sexuality. And then some more drawn out. Like, let's watch him swim a couple more fucking lengths like anyone cares. Right? And let's go to the... Of course she has, like, a station chief who's this horrible, flabby lech. Like, what? I mean... Oh, she has to get the better of him in a strip club with a camera because she's so clever. Like, we've made that point 100 times. Like, get rid of all of that. But my main point being is that you either go for the you know, mid-70s, Cold War, movie about, like, the hoary cliche of, oh, we've taken Russian children and turned them into super spies. Or, like, you tell this, like, engaging, personal, dramatic story, which would all be very well. Sorry. But then that is occasionally derailed for me by the scenes of floppy disks and smoking in hospitals.
Okay. I agree.
When I'm like, people don't smoke in hospitals anymore and no one uses floppy disks.
I agree. I mean, I agree that the floppy disk thing is amazing because...
Also,
because how do they tell the floppy disk?
The idea that there would be missile codes or whatever she was about to be selling them on some fucking floppy disk with an elastic band wrap around it, like she just picked them up in a 1978 Staples. Like, what the... I mean, it was... So this is what I mean. Now, on the flip side of that, going back to what you were saying about the whole Weinstein Me Too thing. So... Jennifer Lawrence is like good friends with Taylor Swift, right? And there's that whole thing with Taylor Swift about the DJ.
Oh yeah,
who,
yeah.
When a photograph was taken of them, Taylor Swift claims that the DJ had his hand up her top, a hand up her skirt, or something like that. Because from the front it looked normal, but from behind he was copping a feel, right? And she won in court, and like, no. I forget how she did it, but it was something to do with a dollar. Like, she won it.
Being something of a Taylor Swift fan, I can tell you that she won in court. And he was asked to pay her a dollar in compensation because I feel like she didn't want to profit, but rather expose him for the ass that he was. I don't know, I'm just hypothetical.
Anyway, there is a scene, I think they're friends, and there is a scene at the beginning of The Red Sparrow which emulates that, which is the greasy Russian oligarch, wealthy dude that she is later meant to seduce. He comes to the ballet at the beginning of the thing, and...
yeah, I'll take that. Thank you very much.
And now we pause at the podcast as they fill up glasses of water.
Thank you.
And she says, you know, he says, anything you need, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, of course, Jenna, anything you want or whatever. And he says, I would like a photograph. And as they go to take the picture, he moves his hand from the back of her dress to up. And he moves his thumb between her shoulder blades and does a fairly, like, movement with his thumb. And then you see, like, Lawrence's face where she's posing for the photograph, but also you can tell, like, I don't like that feeling, right?
Right.
And there's two things there. So first of all, that's definitely a nod towards, like, what's going on at the moment, and all power to it. But on the other hand, it's also explaining that at that point in the character's life, the mere touch of someone despicable like that would be enough to... you know, put the willies up her and, like, you know, make her feel uncomfortable. And then at the end of the movie, she's, like, making out with her uncle and, you know, pretty okay with just about anything.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, right, is I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. The floppy disk thing is ridiculous. There is far too much. It's all...
Yes.
It's all very... it's extremely bleak and difficult to watch sometimes. The violence is really heavy and crazy.
And not, like, let me ask you, is it necessary to the characters, all of it? Is it all justifiably necessary?
What?
Either the extreme violence or the extreme nudity?
Well, the extreme violence, I think, is
like, for example, the first utterly graphic thing we see in the movie is after her leg has been broken in the ballet. We see her lying in sedation at the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Her leg is open and a a doctor is drilling into the bone of her leg.
But
I don't need to see that.
I agree. I would say this about all that, right? That it did make it made, even though it was like slow and ponderous, it was also quite a visceral experience watching it. And I think that it helped accent like the things that she was going through. Like a lot of the
So we were talking before the movie.
Yeah.
About the impossibility in action movies where a young woman or a diminutive smaller person, whether it's a woman or a man, hits a much, much bigger person and they like go down.
Gentlemen,
right?
Would you like anything else?
No, that'll be it for us. Thank you.
Right. And this is what I would say about that, right? So the cynic in me says this.
Yeah.
If we're going to distinguish ourselves from Black Widow, right?
Right.
And I don't know, I haven't read the Red Sparrow book. But the one thing Marvel isn't going to do is ultra-violence, right?
Right.
And also, if we want to take this, let's be fair, slightly cliche story and make it a little bit more realistic and gritty and whatever, right, there are two things we can do. One, slow it right down. And make it and seemingly make it all about like the thoughts and the machinations and the emotions of all the characters. Let's slow it right down and make all the. And the other thing we can do is put quote unquote realistic violence in.
Right.
There are two things we can do to distinguish this from the kind of cheesy hokum graphic novel that it actually is. The problem with that is that there is also sequences in it where Jennifer Lawrence, and I'm not saying that she's not a strong, empowered woman, but with one swell clobber, takes out guys much bigger than her.
Well, when does that happen?
It happens with her rapist, and it happens with...
No, but to be fair, she takes a shower...
Yeah, but she's able to break a shower thing off, which any one of us, even you and me, would be, like, gripping at that, the water...
Well,
would be
all... I agree.
And then she swings at him and takes him out, right? Then, with the blonde, wispy, I look like a cross between Crispin Glover and Michael Pitt, and seemingly I'm the only assassin that the security forces of Russia use because they're willing to spend lots of money flying me all over the place when they could just go, don't we have a guy in Bucharest with a few knives that could stab it into an American guy? No. Let's send a blonde guy who wears all in black who isn't at all a fucking walking cliche. Let's send him. That guy, she just hits him with a skin graft.
I don't disagree, but okay.
Also, how many times can one get walloped, stabbed, slashed open, punched, and all the rest of it, and survive with, 8 hours in hospital? And then she's running about the place. Even her leg miraculously heals quicker than anybody else's leg would.
No, her leg, she was in the school for a long time. We didn't really get that impression, but she's supposed to... At one point, a character goes... It's been 3 months or whatever.
You shouldn't be walking around. And she's like, well, whatever. I'm magic.
Look. Can I just say this, right? The truth is, nothing of what you're saying is inaccurate. And I'm not able to argue any of it. I think it is like a cheesy slice of hokum that they have slowed down and added like graphic violence to make it like more gritty and realistic. I think that they've set it in 2017 because they feel like with everything that's going on between Russia and America right now, that it's, you know, suddenly the enmity between Russia and America is like, you know, relevant again. And I would say that actually one of the interesting things that...
But is there enmity? I thought there was collusion.
There's collusion between, you know... But everybody except the guy in the White House is supposed to be trying to stop the Russians.
Are they?
What do you think Russia
think
what they
do? There's like one or two people are trying to stop them. Everyone else seems to be perfectly all right with it.
Well, no. I mean, if the guy in charge of everything is okay with it, sometimes there's not much you can do. But you can bet that... I mean, I'm going to go ahead to say that...
No. The reason why I'm saying this, and I don't want to go down a political rabbit hole. The reason why I'm saying this is that... there is no tenuous allegory or metaphor between this film and what's going on right now. There just isn't.
No, I disagree, because I think that the point they're making, when this whole thing about, oh, we send these, you know, the Cold War is over, but we still fight, and we're still, you know, we're going to be... Like, that's how Russia think of themselves, you know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, all the stuff that they're doing with... Facebook and Twitter and hacking voting machines and all that stuff, right? All that's part of... We don't have a lot of money. You know, we don't have an army anymore. Right. We're going to, like, sow discord and chaos,
But in the movie, right, this is what I was... I agree. In reality, that's what they're doing. In the movie, Rampling goes... the Americans have grown weak because they're all too busy with social media and shopping. So now's our time to pounce. And their idea of pouncing is, let's train everyone to be like, you know, I'm going to show up in an American agent's thing in a slinky outfit and knob him into submission. Like, that's their whole plan. Like, that's what I mean. There's no direct correlation.
No, I agree.
If she said, they're all on social media, so let's get them through social media and let's teach you in the ways of social media.
But what I was agreeing with, I was agreeing.
You didn't. You said, I don't agree with the allegory, that there's no allegory. You said there was an allegory.
I'm saying that they are, by setting it in 2017, that's what they're doing. They're going, well, there's new beef between America and Russia. It's higher than it's ever been, right? There's a proper, like, proxy, you know, war being fought. And if we set it now, it'll look like it's relevant.
But if they set it now and it was a techno thriller, fine.
No, I agree. But it's obviously the same book. That's what I'm saying. Like, if the book's set in the 90s or the 80s with the floppy disk, and all they're doing is setting it in the modern... No, I'm saying, right, you're not hearing me. I'm saying... Well, the big flaw of the movie is the only reason it's set in 2017 is to make that lame, you know, to try and make it seem relevant. In other words, they're hoping that by setting it in the modern world, that'll be enough for us to go, oh yeah, Russia, Twitter, Facebook, Trump, without having to do the work you're talking about, which is actually make it relevant. They're just making the film, but they can't even be bothered to come up with a better, like, floppy disks substitute, you know, because it's just like, presumably a flash drive. I don't know, but, like, something that works better. The only reason I don't go with a flash drive is, like, who needs to check a flash drive? How would that even... You know what I mean? Like, you don't need, like, 10 minutes to, like, swap flash drives, right? So it's like, I'm saying that's a huge flaw with the movie. The only reason it's set in the modern age is to make it appear relevant, to cash in, as it were, on people going, oh, Russia.
Right, except that there's nothing in the movie.
No, I know, that's what I know. I'm agreeing, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
There's no reason... That all they've done is, like, scribbled out 1987 and written 2017, but everything else is the same. Like, what else is there?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a huge flaw.
But I started off by saying there's no allegory because nothing happens in the movie corresponds to what's going on today.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
And you said, I don't agree with that.
I'm sorry.
That's where I got it.
I disagree with that there's no allegory to be made between, like, what's happening between Russia and America now. That's what I'm thinking about. There isn't, like, a movie to be made about that.
Well, there is, but it wasn't this one.
No, definitely not.
Because... The truth of it is if it was actually set in 2017, the school would be a typing school and a how to catfish people school. It wouldn't be a how to, you know, wear a slinky outfit and wander around Budapest. It would be,
agreed,
how do we get on Facebook and tell a bunch of, you know, mad people what they want to hear? Like, that would be the story.
Yes.
And I suppose you could be like, well, you know, she does go around telling people what they want to hear. And it was like, no, she goes around telling people all she knows. Like, she goes around and just, like, tells people whatever she can just to kind of keep the ball rolling.
It's just one of those movies that when I was... I liked it to start with.
Yeah.
And it nearly lost me because it was quite dull. But I didn't... I just didn't stop.
Would you? Okay, here's a question.
I didn't stop liking it all the way through the movie.
Will you ever watch it again?
No.
Right.
No. If I was going to be brutally honest, and if I had to recommend it to people, I think it would have worked better as a TV miniseries, like as, like, you know, 5 or 6 45-minute long episodes or something.
The only thing I would argue against that is by about the third episode, you'd be like, I'm sorry, what? Like, what's going on?
No, I've actually...
At least with a single consolidated movie, and especially being in the theatre, you had to just be like, okay, this is what's going on. Like, you just had to, like, keep following.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that I can't sit here and say that a movie where one of the big, you know, dramatic set pieces is her pretending to shake floppy disks on a laptop that's blatantly too modern to accept floppy disks,
yeah,
is, you know, some kind of modern classic. And I don't disagree that the only reason it's set in the modern age is to try and cash in on what happens to be happening around, and with very little, like, as you say, thought for actually how to update it and make it relevant. It's just like the same thing. I don't disagree that it is just like a bunch of spy cliches, but yeah, if you stuck them in a graphic novel, you'd be like, whoa, how brave. And if you've slowed it right down and made it ultra violent, it looks like an art house thing, rather than, you know, what it is. But I like Lawrence. I like Gloosh Irons.
I even like potato
with a beard. Who's the guy?
Oh, he's so bland. He's so bland.
I know, but I think his name's Jeffrey Bland.
I think that's his name. He's not quite Blucas Bland, but he is up there.
Nobody is Blucas. But I mean, listen, again, I'm watching him and going, I know this guy's bland, right? He's rubbish.
And the people are like, oh, but he's so handsome. I'm like, no,
he's got a potato. He's a potato with a beard.
He looks like 45 and she looks 19.
Yeah, he's a 45-year-old potato with a beard. And I'm watching it. It's a very curious experience, right? Because I'm watching it and I'm thinking, I know he's boring. I know he's bad at acting. But for some reason, I'm quite enjoying it. I even quite like his character, right?
But it's one of those things where
I can't explain that. It's literally inexplicable.
But how in 2017 and 2018 are we still going? Are producers of movies and in general looking at people like this guy, or looking at people like Jay Courtney, or looking like people like Sam Worthington, or where his name is, looking at people like that and going, yeah, we all know they're awful, but let's keep putting them in.
But that's like, it's like
spitting hit someone who is both more talented, more attractive, and like more age appropriate to life.
I agree, but it's funny. I think what they've done is there was a period before the Courtneys and the Worthingtons where they took charismatic people, charismatic actors, and then they stuck them and go, oh, he's a charismatic actor. We'll put them in this movie. And they were all stuck in like horribly inappropriate movies that didn't showcase their talents. Like Colin Farrell's like a really good actor, really charismatic. I just kept sticking him in things that he was rubbish.
Right.
Because it was like wrong frame, it was the wrong movie. Just like, so what they've gone is, so we'll just take like potatoes
with
stubble and we can put them in literally anything and they'll be the same.
No, I know exactly what it is. I've got a perfect allegory,
okay,
right? Or metaphor rather. So you go into a clothing shop, right? And you see a pair of trousers that you really like. Like, you see the trousers on the hanger and you're like, them's the very boys for me, right? And you go into the dressing room, right? And it doesn't matter what shirt you put with it, how you try it on, whether you sit in them, stand in them, turn to the side or whatever. You just can't make them work.
Right.
There's something about it.
Yeah, yeah,
the colouring is off, the fabric's too long.
Your
it's
legs
too short,
look weird.
It's too tight,
yeah, yeah.
Whatever it is, right? So then you go... and you go find a pair of like black, blue, grey or beige Dockers and or chinos that you know are awful, but they fit.
But
and
they're trousers.
Comfortable.
And we're walking around and nobody's arresting you.
So Sam Worthington or this guy or whatever his name is are the beige Dockers you resort to because the ones you'd really like to be able to wear and pull
the
off.
The ones you'd like to be able to pull off.
You cannot.
Just can't make it work. I think there's a huge market out there for like the bland chino actors of America.
Right.
Because you can't. Because you can put them in literally anything.
Right.
But again, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I'm sitting there watching this movie and I'm thinking, I know this is boring. I know that, like, this is driving you insane. It's so boring and so long. And I know that her Russian accent is, like, just incredibly touchy.
Well, everyone was. I mean, where was Irons from? Because Irons wasn't Russian. Irons was just...
He was
Irons
from Lucia like, Starn.
Irons, Irons was, like, weirdly Swedish. He was like, I am Jeremy Irons.
Sorry, Jeremy, ready to go? Do you want to take the glasses off? I know, these... we didn't... Red tinted. You look like a South American dictator.
Yeah,
that's why I'm wearing it. Right. Maybe you could. Yeah. Why don't we try seeing them with off?
Yeah.
Nope.
And why is your Russian military tunic like open at the top? and like, why are you constantly like smoking?
He could have used a beret.
Could have used a beret.
Could have buried up.
But there was. It was.
I just sometimes you watch a film and you know that it's not very good.
No, I know what you're saying and I agree with you. Listen,
it tickled me in the right places.
I didn't come out of the movie angry. I didn't come out of the movie.
You came out of it tired.
I came out of it tired.
And exhausted.
But I didn't come out of it bored and I didn't come out of it angry. I'll say this. I'm glad we went to see it.
Yeah, me too.
But there are like there's some really good shots in it. Like, there's some really good photography in it. And Lawrence does give it the beans. Like, you have to give her credit for this.
Yeah.
Which no one will. Everyone's going to, like, rip the movie to shreds. And whatever it was that she was trying to do in terms of her empowerment and in terms of her performance and in terms of her as a actor and... I would imagine probably slightly behind the scenes something of a producer, even if her name isn't on it. And her name might be on it, I don't know.
But. No, but I think you're right, because it's so obviously her movie.
But, like, whatever it was she was trying to do to put her stamp on things, after doing some... she's been doing some really... From a very young age, she's been doing some very mature... roles.
I really like
very
it's a general
good
role
performances.
Like
and she's a weird, because on one hand she's starring in The Hunger Games and on the other hand she's doing, you know, American Hustle or Mother or whatever it is. So she is interesting for that regard, and Red Sparrow is interesting on that side of things. But so I feel compelled to mention that, but at the same time I just can't recommend it, and it's kind of sad that something that has all the components in it that if they were just put together differently I would rather enjoy.
I do see what you're saying about, because I think if you're honest about it, it can be tough when you're using, because what we're talking about is, right, basically, do you use like the cliches of a genre? You can either like use them to deliver another story, right?
Right.
Or you can just like celebrate them and have fun, you know. Right. Like, and if you made Black Widow, then it would have been the latter, right? They would just like use the cliche, celebrated them, had fun with them, and it would have looked great, you know. It would have been a great movie. If nothing else, like this proves that if they could be bothered to make a Black Widow movie, they, you know, they could really make a movie, right?
Yeah.
Or you do something else where you try and use the cliches of it to like deliver like a different story. And if I had one criticism of it, it's that I don't think they had, my biggest criticism of it actually is I don't think they had like a single like firm idea of why they wanted to tell the story. Because I think it's okay when you use like cliches and stuff to like deliver something else. We should, I guess, pay, right?
Yeah.
You want to go 50-50?
Yeah.
We pay off at the desk anyway. Just remembered. You can use the cliches to really do something interesting if you have a firm idea of what that is, because then you can, you know, you can pick and choose and
right.
And use it. It's like it's just like an understood delivery system, right? That's all it is.
I can pare this down.
Go on.
It's way too long to be the revenge thriller that it actually is, because what it actually is a revenge thriller. All the other stuff is just hokum and subterfuge for it to essentially be a revenge thriller. So it's far too long to be a revenge thriller, right?
Right.
But there's not enough substance to the spy baloney, because there's really no effort made to be like, why do the Russians care about the Americans, or why do the Americans care about the Russians? There's no real effort other than the Russians and the Americans. There's really no one thing. There's like, oh, there's a mole, but one presumes there's multiple moles all the time, everywhere. Like,
wait. I just woke up, but did he just say there were multiple moles everywhere? Like many moles? Like, more than one mole? Dash it all, I'm going to need a bigger shovel.
All I mean is, there's not some big political thing at stake, right?
Right.
So, or war. There's no, like, someone's not about to launch a missile or whatever it is. So, it's too long to be a revenge thriller with a twist ending. And it's not a twisty-turny spy...
No, but I'm
intrigue
going,
and whatever.
No, because I'm going,
in order to sustain,
but I'm going further than
its
that.
Its length.
But I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, although I agree with you on both points, I'm saying if you're going to try and make something like more of an art house thing, more of like a, you know, a study in, like try and investigate some deeper thing.
You need to want to tell the story.
Which I think in this case, what they're talking about is how a young woman goes about discovering who she is and what she wants.
Right.
When most, you know, I would imagine beautiful women, whether they're ballerinas or actresses or spies, are continually told what to do, what to wear, who to shag, all of that. Like, it's all like laid out for them. And I think what they're going for here is it's supposed to be a story of how a young woman, whoever she is, comes to learn what it is that she really wants, right? And how to use what she's got to get there, right? But because they've chosen a spy thing, where it's all, like you're saying, like there's revenge and there's subterfuge and there's who means what, there's all this, you know, instead of accenting that central idea that you're trying to talk about, it just like confuses it, makes it all flim-flam. And it gets lost amongst all this stuff. Instead of it being like used to like follow that story along.
Okay, you know? That's very interesting. We hadn't mentioned that before, and actually that's... Yeah, we hadn't talked about that. I mean, we sort of recognized that Jennifer Lawrence's performance was, you know, brave, and we equated it to reality. But like in general, you're right. If you look at it as a story of any young woman, and what it,
you know, first she dances, and what,
but,
you know,
no, but what it must be like, just for any young woman, what they go through, the abuse they suffer, and the fact that ultimately, the only road that seems to be to get ahead is to become this, like, you know, manipulating, you know, play them at their own game type person. And so that's interesting. Okay, so that's the metaphor of the movie.
Yeah, but the problem is, like you're saying, all this stuff around it,
right?
It doesn't help. Everything should be about smoothing the way for that message. Like, if you set, right, you make it a detective story, you put a murder at the end, so you can go, aha, the murderer. But really, you're just delivering this other story that you want to tell, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Cracker is never about who did the murder. It's about, like, what's going on with Robbie Coltrane.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's what it's supposed to be. But if what your story does instead is just make everything confusing and nobody knows what anybody stands or what anybody thinks...
Oh, that's good. Okay, just, like, so no. But now you've... Okay.
Oh, now you're being interesting.
No, because you've made me think about it, and it does fulfill my old adage, which we kind of talked about with Ganja and Hess, which is that the more serious you try and make something, or the more you stretch something out, or you try and play the earnest artist human angle, the less I feel the message actually gets across. Mm. Whereas in something like a Coffee or a Foxy Brown, which I know you're not a big fan of, but like...
I haven't seen Foxy Brown, I just didn't like Coffee.
Just to use that as an example, I watch that, and it's a grindhousey B-movie, wham-bam, you know, action black exploitation film. But it taught me more about, you know, female trouble and then female empowerment, and Pam Grier is an actress, and
I don't know if he hasn't made a single noise all night.
It literally sounds like he's grinding teeth. It sounds like the bone saw at the beginning of the movie.
It does sound like that.
It seems to be winding down, whatever it is.
No, no, back up again.
But my basic point, and I'll talk a bit louder, but my basic point is that I still claim genre films and B-movies, to my sensibility, because they tend to be 90 minutes, they tend to have a fairly straightforward plot, they tend to have a lot of stuff going on in them, they still teach me more about humanity and personality and all that stuff than something like this does. Although, when you point that out about this movie... Fuck!
They're really shaking that milk.
Although, when you point it out about this movie, again, it adds another... It does genuinely add another interesting layer. Not enough to get me to ever watch it again, but
no,
I mean...
No, I agree. I wouldn't either. But I
think it does come back to what we said. If anyone should be applauded for the film, it's Jennifer Lawrence. She's clearly trying to say a bunch of stuff with it, both personal and of the moment.
Right.
And I don't think the of the moment thing is the Russian-American thing. I think the of the moment is the Me Too thing.
I agree.
And I think that is indicated. Now I understand it. That is indicated by the thumb on the back.
I'll be serious. I agree. Well, let's end it there, because I think we both made our point.
Is this a diner or a dentist office? That's what I want to know.
Like
And on the After Movie Diner this week, I've been giving Jim Wallace a root canal. Next week, I'll be talking to Herb Lom and giving him three fillings. And taking...
Here at the After Movie Dentist.
Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, it's all good. And no, actually, do you know what? I think you've won me around. I think the sad thing about this movie is that not enough people are going to like it, get it, or see it. Yeah. And I think that that's a shame. And I'll go back to saying what I was saying before, which is, if they'd made it 90 minutes...
Yeah.
And if
they set it in 1987.
And set it in 1987, and put a bunch of... Well, just kept it the way it is. Set it in 1987, strip it down to 90 minutes. I think you could have told the same story. You could have had the same journey.
Yeah.
And I think we would have got a lot more out of it.
Yeah. And I also, now I think about it, the thing about the school doesn't need to be in. That's too heavy-handed. If that's what we're talking about is the metaphor. If that's the message of the movie.
Right.
Then that's like something that she learns. You know what I mean? Like most powerful moments of it is when she like acts, because like that's what she has to do in the moment. And it's like her decision. It's not like... Like, okay. She doesn't listen to anything Rampling. Nothing Rampling says or does in the whole movie is, like, relevant at all. So that
could also, it would almost have been better, carrying on the theme that you're talking about, for her to have her empowerment moments, both of which happen in the school.
Yeah.
For her to have her empowerment moments later in the story.
Yeah.
The problem is she has these two big empowerment moments, and then we go out into the streets of Bucharest and Russia and wherever, and she's back to being sometimes empowered, sometimes vulnerable, sometimes out of her depth, sometimes in her depth, sometimes being abused. Sometimes, like, the ultimate empowerment is the ending sequence where she finally gets the better of a family member.
Pretty much everybody.
Yeah, she gets the better of everybody, but like, it doesn't quite work, does it?
No.
I've gone back to going. It doesn't.
But look, if I'm honest, I think your summary is best, which is there's something interesting there, but it's buried underneath some bad decisions. And I think a couple of them would have been studio. I think the studio would have pushed for 2017 for the Russia thing, because I don't think the people making the film are that committed to that idea, clearly.
No, they dress everyone in retro clothing.
If they'd been set in 87, other than the mobile phones, right, and the laptop, it could have been 87.
Which no one does anything on the mobile phones.
No, that's what I mean. Like, it seems to me that that might have been like a studio thing, because it's like, it's cheaper and we'll make it relevant to this Russia thing happening now. That's a story now, like Russia, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think the people making the film give a shit about that, whatever they need to get the damn thing made. It doesn't quite work, but it's interesting. And just personally, when I was watching it, I did, and I wasn't sitting there going, "Oh, what a brave examination of the V2 movie." I was going, "Well, this is a bit of a bonkers spy thriller that Lawrence is giving the beans. I'm quite enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, I like the way it looks." And that was really my only. And there's only after talking about it that like we come across this stuff.
Yeah.
But mostly, I kind of enjoyed it.
Right.
But also, if anybody said to me, "Yeah, I saw it and it bore the tits on me," I'd go, "I completely feel your pain."
Right.
You know.
I'm glad to the place where we got to.
Yeah, me too, man. As always.
I'm genuinely glad that we got to that place.
Me too, man.
Because I honestly did not know what I felt about the film.
Yeah.
And therefore I was resorting to being grumpy.
Well, that's fine. Well, you're tired. Everybody gets grumpy when they're tired. I get super grumpy when I'm tired. And you came out of that movie, not grumpy or angry or upset. You came out of that movie knackered.
Knackered.
Like, I'm knackered. That movie knackered me.
Yeah.
And so often you're a bit grumpy. It's like you basically just woke up from a nap that you didn't even get to sleep through properly.
Yeah.
You're a bit grumpy. Nothing wrong with that. Now we're all fine.
Well, we're all fine because I think between the two of us we've had a bit of a revelation and we've tightened up what we feel about the film.
Yeah,
I was like that.
Yeah, me too, man.
It's a nice arc.
Agreed.
And it's all part of the mystery that will be revealed on episode 500
of the After Movie Dentist.
Of the After Movie Dentist. There's a new molar for you.
You've been listening to the After Movie Diner with your host John Cross. Support us at patreon.com/aftermoviediner, or I'll punch you in the teats. Rate and review us on iTunes, Earthling.
Roll at the barrow, we went to see Red Sparrow with Jenny Laurel in the buff. Oh, it was also bleeding long, and we even saw a dog, and after several hours I had had enough. Oh, so we were selling porkies, old Blandy ran round Corky, and Jay Law broke her bacon at the ballet. It wasn't an old 80s flick, despite the bleeding floppy disks, and all the spy cliches will send you quite too lally. But it wasn't a load of old Jacksons, although it skipped out on the action. There were boiled beef and carrots all over the screen, but it was telling fibs and knew the Babe Ruth. And will anybody ever come clean? Not bleeding lightly. So roll out a barrow, no need to see Red Sparrow. Maybe wait for it to come on the custard and jelly. Sure, it's photograph real chicken and its performances are kicking, but some of it lacks the necessary welly. But if you don't want to Adam and Eve me, then be my guest and Red Sparrow, go and see. But don't come bawling to me with a pain in your bowl. It's almost 3 hours long and it's not really worth the trouble. Ain't that the Babe Ruth? Oh, roll out the barrow, we went to see Red Sparrow with Jenny Laurel in the buff. Well, it was all so bleeding long and we even saw a dong, and after several hours I had had enough. And who was telling Porky's, old Blandy ran round Corky, and Jay Law broke up bacon at the ballet. It wasn't an old 80s flick, despite the bleeding floppy disks and all the spoilers.